Ready to prioritize yourself? Your skin is a great place to start. Dime Beauty, founded by a master esthetician, is more than just a skincare company. With four skin-conscious categories, skincare, beauty, body care, and fragrance, Dime offers simple, spa-worthy products that will help bring your glow back. Whether you're revitalizing your regimen with nourishing products or building one from scratch, Dime makes it easy. The Work System, our all-in-one best-selling routine, includes a cleanser of your choice, toner, serums, and moisturizers, taking the guesswork out of skincare for your healthiest, happiest skin yet. Dime's commitment to clean ingredients and sustainable packaging ensures every product is as gentle on your skin as it is on the planet. With thousands of glowing 5-star reviews and a loyal community, the results speak for themselves. Revive your skin and give yourself the routine refresh you deserve by visiting dimebeautyco.com. That's dimebeautyco.com. Your best skin awaits.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone!
Swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
What's up? Welcome back to Play Testing. It is episode 207. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Before we get going, remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. Find us on WEI's YouTube channel. You can find the Playtesty playlist there, which has all of our episodes in video form. And you can hit the thumbs up on those videos, which we really appreciate, and subscribe to WEI. And then find us on the socials at Playtesty on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Sammy's here. Pat's here. Gordo here with you guys. Sox coming off another series loss to another team that they should certainly be able to handle. Sox lose 2 out of 3 to the Minnesota Twins. And, you know, just a synopsis, good teams find ways to win games and bad teams find ways to lose games. And the Red Sox are 4-9 in one-run games this year. You flip that script, they're 23-13. But that's just not the hand that we as fans of this team have been dealt. They're 18-18. The team to this point in the season, as we sit here recording at the beginning of May, has been nothing short of mid. They are mid. They are 18-18. It's undeniable. They've been mid. They have certainly been a disappointment to this point. That said, even today, even 36 games in to this season with 18-18, plenty of data to that says mid. I still sit here before you guys, in your guys' ears, if you're listening to this podcast, telling you I think it's going to get better. I don't think that their ceiling is as high as it once was, because I think Tristan Casas turning into the Tristan Casas that we for sure know he can be was a big part of that. And he obviously wasn't producing. So counting on that to get better was a big part of where this team could go. If you watched this series, if you've been following the Red Sox news, obviously it's been a couple of days now, but you know, Tristan Casas tore his left patellar tendon in his knee. It's a severe injury. It's a long road back. He's certainly not coming back this year, and we will see just when he can make it back next year, and even if he's going to be the same guy when he comes back. We can have Pat go into that a little bit, and maybe that's where we should start this show before we get into the takes about the team, and we'll talk about it a little bit. If you want a more in-depth discussion about the Tristan Casas stuff and first base replacements, which we're going to have the conversation here. But we did talk about this on the radio, and we posted that segment. So if you want more of that after we finish this discussion here, be sure to click on that. But yeah, I mean, just to begin the Casas stuff, it was devastating to see just, you know, a guy who cares about the game and about his swing and about the team as much as he does. And you know, I don't want to be like he cares more than whatever. He cares as much as anyone on this team and in this game, and he lives and breathes and dies with this game. And I feel so awful watching a guy like that go down because I just don't know how he's going to be able to deal without the game. And it kind of broke my heart to see him go down. And I tried as much as I could to avoid seeing the Twitter replies to the videos, to the tweets about the injury, just because I know people can be jerks. But you know, I wish nothing but the best for him. It was awful to see him go down. Pat, do you want to go into a little bit about what this injury is for people who might not be super familiar with it? Because it's not super common in baseball. Like, we saw Garrett Richards do this at Fenway, but it's not something we've ever seen, at least in our lifetimes, from a Red Sox player.
Yeah, I mean, I would even say it's not overly common in sports, period. It's one of those weird tendon ruptures. So essentially, the tendon that he ruptured is the only tendon, for the most part, that keeps your kneecap where it is, where it should be. Because of that, like, if you think about how much, like, you use your quads, like when you walk, when you do stairs, when you squat, if you're playing first base, like, that's a lot of body weight and load through that tendon. Like, that's a thick tendon. Like, that takes on a lot of load. So he had the surgery today as we record to repair it. Average Joe, if they tear it, you're looking at, you know, 6 months minimum before they're cleared for, like, going to, like, Planet Fitness to, like, work out. This is a professional baseball player who has to be able to play, you know, over 140 games. I would guess, realistically, 8 to 12 months. And 12 months is probably what I would say is the most likely. It's a brutal recovery. It's a brutal rehab. It's a long process. Wish Tristan nothing but the best. But yeah, he is 100%. This isn't like a UCL with the internal brace kind of deal. We were like, oh, like maybe, you know, like, no, definitively Tristan Casas will not touch the field again in 2025.
Yeah, this seems like, and I'm no expert, I'm no Pat Brown, but this seems like the type of injury where you at least consider long-term replacements for Tristan Casas, meaning more than 1 year replacement. And I want to echo what you guys have both said. Sucks to see Casas on a personal level with the four of us. He's been really nice, giving us great content on the field. I think he's been much better than he gets credit for. The ceiling is high. We've spoken about it a million times. It's frustrating we don't get to see it. I know that people who doubted him probably feel validated. I think that's improper. I don't think they should feel validated. This is kind of, you know, it's like a push. Like when a bet is nulled, you just push. Nobody wins or loses. But I will say I feel like Red Sox fans are the ones who are losing here. This is a guy who we all expected to be cleanup, I would say. Middle of the order, if not cleanup. So it sucks, man. And to see his face on the field, that kind of blank stare, I can't imagine. I can't imagine the pain he was in. You know, he probably had a ton of adrenaline rushing through him, but still, it's got to hurt on some level. And the mental anguish has to be even worse. So wishing Tristan Casas the best. Today, Sunday, as we record, he had surgery at Mass General. Hoping for some miracle, and he's back a lot sooner than we expect, but prepared for the worst.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that sucks is that he actually was like, people may not want to believe it, but he was starting to put together better at bats to turn the corner. Had a mid 900s OPS in the week prior to that injury, and we're just not going to be able to see what could have happened. I was really excited to dance on the graves of the people who were doubting him, and the longer he struggled, the more people there were, and I was really excited because I had all the confidence in the world that he was going to turn it around, and now we're just going to have to wait and see. But even me, as like maybe one of the top Tristan Casas defenders, apologists, whatever you want to call it, even I at this point, like Sammy, you said maybe it's time to start thinking about long-term alternatives just because you don't know what you're going to... I'm not fully against that. Like I want to see this guy succeed for the Red Sox. I want to see him out there. But... I mean, we're gonna have to see how this recovery goes, how he looks. Like, will the Red Sox be in a spot where they can afford to put their trust in him for next year when he may not even be ready for opening day? Like, that's, it's going to be a question that we're going to talk about all offseason. And it's probably not a question for today. The question for today is, what do you do for the immediate term and the rest of the 2025 season? We all know each other's takes on this because we did radio, but I think we should run through them again. I think we all just kind of go through what we would do here. And let's skip immediate term because we know what they've done in the immediate term. They called up Abraham Toro. Romy Gonzalez is going to be the starting first baseman. We'll see how often Abraham Toro gets in there. He got in there for a pinch hit appearance in the ninth. Great for him getting his first at bat of the season against Yoan Duran, like impossible. But yeah, so Romy and Toro, that's for now. For me, what I would do, Rafael Devers is my first baseman. I think he should have a glove and be learning the position as soon as possible. I think having played third base in his career, first base is the next closest position in terms of if you know how to play third, you know how the ball comes off the bat at that close of a distance. Yes, it's a different angle, but you can learn that position, and you know his hands have never really been a problem. He'll have the first base mitt. He can play that position, might be one of the better defensive first basemen in the organization if he learns it. I think he'd be fine out there, and moving him off of DH and to first base would allow you to bring Masataka Yoshida back in a DH role. As far as we know, he's not hurt to the point where he can't swing. We saw him in spring training. He played well. I think he would be a good option to bring in here after a short rehab stint, you know, week, 2 weeks in the minors. As soon as he's ready to go, he can go. If Masa's not cutting it, or if they want to keep Masa in the witness protection program or wherever the fuck he is, then they can rotate guys in that role. Like if you want to call up Roman Anthony, then it can be Williers a DH one day, Duran's a DH one day, Roman's a DH one day. Hell, even Rafael is a DH one. Like, I don't care. Or if you want to do it with Marcelo, you can do Marcelo's a DH one day, Bregman's a DH one day, Story's a DH one day, Campbell's a DH one day. Like, you can do a rotating cast of characters, and all of that, all of those options are possible if you make Rafael Devers the first baseman. Are they willing to go that route with him? Breslow kind of seems semi-open to it. Cora did not seem open to it. Remains to be seen if Devers is open to it. So we'll see. Like, there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of people that need to be on board with it. Devers especially, like, they've jerked that guy around, and you know, they stripped third base from him. They stripped the possibility of playing the field from him. And now to go up to him and to say, we need you to do this for us, it is asking a lot. That said, he is paid a lot of money and he wants to win. And to me, I think this is how you put the best team on the field. Curious, you guys, where do you stand? And granted, it's been a couple of days, and there's been a lot of discourse both on the broadcast and online, so maybe your opinions have changed. If they have changed, tell me your new ones. If they haven't changed, tell me what you got.
So first, I want to say, Gordo, your idea that you just laid out, if it were the offseason, that would be my number one choice by far. I just think, as you put it, jerking Rafi around again might be a little difficult for him. He's just learning the DH role. He's starting to settle into it. We've heard about how, you know, that's not as easy as it sounds to be a DH. It's a mental thing, and baseball is the most mental sport there is. So, I like the idea, but what I would do at this point, May 4th, I would give Christian Campbell a shot at first base. I think Christian Campbell has shown that he's more than capable of moving around the field. He's played second base mostly. He's also played center field. He's played left field. In the minors, he played shortstop. He played third base. I don't think he would have trouble acclimating to first base at all. And the thing about him is, yes, like I just said, he's versatile, but he doesn't really excel at one position. He's capable at a lot of them, but he's not great at one. And if there's one knock on him, it's his throwing. He doesn't have a great throwing arm. So I think first base is a good fit for him. The collateral would be, now you can take, now with Campbell off of second, you could do two things. You call up Marcelo Meyer, and you can either put him at short and move Story to second, where, if we remember, Story was great when he played second in 2022, or you could put Meyer at second and keep Story at short. I'm cool with either, but that's the way I would go. It puts Christian Campbell at a position that he can kind of settle into for a while here, at least in 2025. Builds on his versatility, and it gets Marcelo Meyer a hot bat right now in AAA. It gets him up for the long haul. It's not just a little cup of coffee. I don't think they're going to do that with Marcelo Meyer. So I'm you know, that's my number one choice right now. But again, if it were the offseason, I'd be all in on the Rafi idea. I'm just a little hesitant midseason right now.
And before we get to Pat's idea, the truth about this is we don't know for a fact how good any of these guys can be at first base, because we've never seen it, whether it be Devers, Campbell. Rob's idea was to put Marcelo Meyer at first base. The Red Sox have been hesitant. It doesn't seem like they're doing that with Meyer or Anthony. And we were in Worcester today, and didn't sound like Marcelo was going to get work there to us. So I definitely don't foresee that. But whoever does get work there, it's going to be new to them. And there's a chance that they pick it up, and there's a chance that they don't. Pat, what do you got for yours?
So mine is the most boring, but I think also the most realistic. I think you just roll with Romy and you sign some veteran depth. Like, I hate it, but Rizzo, let him work up in the minors. If Romy starts to, you know, kind of fizzle, you at least have some kind of veteran stopgap there. But for the time being, you run Romy out there. He's capable enough on defense. He's perfectly fine on offense. And the one thing that I don't think I mentioned on radio, and I kind of thought about it afterward, I know it's not the sexiest offense, especially like losing Casas in there and putting Romy in, but it gives you a different offense. The entire team at that point, aside from Rafi, is a legit threat to run. So you can manufacture runs by stealing bases and moving around the bases, as opposed to, you know, Casas kind of driving them in. It's a different look for the offense, but it still puts you in some pretty decent scoring positions. And they've been doing it all year. Romy just kind of lets them do it even more. And then once the deadline rolls around, whatever the price is on a first baseman, sucks, but you got to pay it. Whether it be, you know, if Milwaukee continues to kind of collapse a little bit, Rhys Hoskins, if Tampa Bay starts to fizzle out, Yandy Diaz, any of those guys.
We love Yandy on this show.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's going to be a steep price, but I mean, you have to pay it, because even if you can kind of coast with Romy until the All-Star break, there's no guarantees the second half of the year or into playoffs. So that's kind of mine. It's boring, but I also think it's the most realistic.
I think you're definitely okay to wait until the deadline with this too, by the way. If you're adding externally, I don't think this is like a you have to do it now panic button thing. You know, little different story with the bullpen. I'm sure we'll get to that later. But I think, like you said, Pat, just for now, if they're not going to do anything crazy and they want to go outside the organization eventually, I think you're fine with Romy over there. And here's, I guess, Toro, a little bit of Toro.
Here's the thing. Romy he's had a good season. He's hitting .327, .831 OPS. First base defense, I mean, for a guy who's played it as little as he has, is okay. It's certainly not what you'd maybe want, but all things considered, I think he's been fine over there.
Ready to prioritize yourself? Your skin is a great place to start. Dime Beauty, founded by a master esthetician, is more than just a skincare company. With four skin-conscious categories, skincare, beauty, body care, and fragrance, Dime offers simple, spa-worthy products that will help bring your glow back. Whether you're revitalizing your regimen with nourishing products or building one from scratch, Dime makes it easy. The Work System, our all-in-one best-selling routine, includes a cleanser of your choice, toner, serums, and moisturizers, taking the guesswork out of skincare for your healthiest, happiest skin yet. Dime's commitment to clean ingredients and sustainable packaging ensures every product is as gentle on your skin as it is on the planet. With thousands of glowing 5-star reviews and a loyal community, the results speak for themselves. Revive your skin and give yourself the routine refresh you deserve by visiting dimebeautyco.com. That's dimebeautyco.com. Your best skin awaits.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That said, this offense right now, in general this season, and this is going to kind of lead us into maybe the next portion of this podcast. The offense, you can look at where they rank in runs per game or total runs or what their OPS is and all those stats, and they're going to rank out pretty good. But with that, I'll give you this. They've played 36 games this year. 18 of those 36, 50% of the games, this team has scored 4 runs or less. They've scored 2 runs or less in 10 of the 36 games. All right. The offense, to me, is not in a place where you can sustain Romy Gonzalez being your everyday first baseman, including against right-handed pitching, which I read you those stats. Most of those numbers are against lefties. Granted, he's held his own against righties, so I don't want to rule out the possibility that he could do that. But I just don't think there's enough thump in this Red Sox lineup right now to sustain kind of just status quo and hope for the best. And they haven't built themselves any sort of wiggle room to do that either. They're 18-18 fighting for a playoff spot when really they should be leading this division. I keep thinking there's talent in this organization there's offensive talent in this organization that isn't contributing at the major league level. There's 3 names. There's Roman Anthony. There's Marcelo Meyer. There's Masataka Yoshida. I don't want to loop Vaughn Grissom, who we saw working at first base today in Worcester. I don't want to loop him in with those 3, but you could bring his name into this too. He once again did not start at first base. He's not played first base in either of the 2 games since Tristan Casas' injury. So I don't know if that is an immediate, like, I don't know if they're ramping him up for any of this right now. But those 3 names before Grissom, those three guys are guys that could help this team if the team finds a way to get them in the lineup. To me, I think you got to find a way to get one or multiple of those guys in this lineup to provide a boost. It's not like a lifeline save us, but it would provide a boost, I think.
It helps, yeah. And this is a great example of stats needing context, because if you look at the, you know, team stats 2025 so far, excluding Sunday's game, Red Sox as a team hitting 256, that's 5th in Major League Baseball. They have the 5th most RBIs with 166. They have the 2nd most hits with 311. They also have the 2nd most steals with 42. And still, I think we can all agree that this offense, not good enough right now. It's inconsistent, is the way I describe it. It has a high ceiling for sure, but overall, it's just it's Jekyll and Hyde. Sometimes they perform, and you know what? It's Jekyll and Hyde in the same game. They'll be hot to start out a game, score 5 runs in the first 3 innings, and then get 1 hit the rest of the game. They'll lose 6-5. That happens way too much. Yep. Way, way, way too much.
Yeah, I think the other thing too is it's so frustrating, because I'm looking at their schedule right now, right? They win the last 2 in Cleveland. They win the first 1 in Baltimore. They blow the 6-0 lead. They are cruising the whole game, that last game in Toronto. Blow it in the 7th. Lose that game 4-2. They win game 1 in Minnesota. Blow the game yesterday and blow the game today as we're recording. That's an 8-game win streak. That should be what is going on right now, and it's not. And it's in part due to Whitlock, Slayton, and Chapman are being way, way, way too heavily relied on. Like,
well, yeah, wait, Pat, let me ask you a question here. With the last eight games, how much of it do you attribute to the offense, and how much of it do you attribute to the bullpen? Because they're both super factors here. Like, outside of the 6-0 blown lead, which you could still blame on the offense, because they had 1 base runner in the final 4 innings of that game. Every single one of these blown bullpen leads, you could also say, well, the offense, they put up 3 runs. Well, the offense, they put up 2 runs. Well, the offense, they put up 4 runs. So, the issue is, it's like, one of these things needs to, like, if the offense is what this offense should be, then these are, outside of the 6-0 lead, these are bigger leads that are going to get protected. If the bullpen, if you can trust your guys in Whitlock and Slayton to be Whitlock and Slayton, then these are wins, even though the offense isn't scoring enough. So, like, where is the blame? Where does the fixing need to happen? Like, where are we just riding this out? Like, it's a lot of moving parts, and it's a lot of not good.
Go ahead, Matt.
I was going to say, I would put 1 game on the offense. and it's that 4-2 loss, that last game in Toronto. They're doing enough, but the other ones are legitimate blown leads. And it's that is much, much more the bullpen than it is not scoring kind of in the middle and later in games. And like we've been saying it since November, they need another high leverage arm. Liam Hendricks is not who they thought they were. He's looked good, but do you really trust him? If you flipped, let's say Whitlock went one inning today and you put Hendricks out there that second inning instead of Whitlock, are you trusting Hendricks right now? I don't think I could.
Not yet. It's, I'm it's getting tough. There, but not yet.
It's like I don't trust him, but at the same time, should Liam Hendricks get the sixth inning in a 3-run lead at some point soon? Probably. He's thrown 5 straight scoreless innings. I don't think his stuff looks the same, but at some point, like you do have to start throwing him into leverage. Yeah. Otherwise, like why is he here?
Results-based business.
And it sucks, though, because every time Whitlock goes out, you kind of feel like he has to go two because you don't have that arm. If he's able to go one and, you know, go back-to-backs, that's way more valuable at this point because these guys are so overworked right now because they don't have that other high-leverage arm. Garrett goes two today, and second inning was less than good. And it's just it's the bullpen right now, and it sucks because it's the guys you really were counting on for the first, you know, 28 games.
So here's this nugget, and this is why I would I'd place most of the blame on the bullpen right now for why this team is floundering, and this is something that all of us, every Red Sox podcast, every Red Sox radio show, every Red Sox person, every drunk guy at the corner of the street, I think everyone said, the bullpen, probably at least one arm short. And listen to this. This is a nugget from a friend of the program, Matthew Gross, from Over the Monster. He tweets, in 7 of their last 12 losses, the Red Sox win expectancy peaked at over 75%. Ooh. April 9th versus the Blue Jays peaked at 83%. April 12th versus the White Sox, 79%. 79% chance to beat the White Sox, and they blew it. April 20th, 420 versus the White Sox, 84%, and they blew it. Cleveland, April 26th, 76%. Brutal. April 30th at the Blue Jays, 98% chance to win at one point in that game. May 1st versus the Blue Jays, 83%. And today, on Sunday, May 4th versus the Twins, 84%. That is brutal. That has me looking at the bullpen. I'm not letting the offense off the hook. The offense could have, you know, picked up the bullpen in a lot of those games. But if I had to pick where I'm pointing the finger right now, has to be the bullpen.
I think that's more than fair, Sammy. And I like that stat that you just pulled. With the bullpen, I have two questions for you guys. Because I've seen a lot of people talking about Garrett Whitlock's role. And whether he should have been out there for a second inning today, I think obviously he had to be out there for a second inning today. I don't know who else unless you want Justin Slayton and Aroldis Chapman to go more than 3 outs for the first time all season. Yeah, it's Whitlock's second inning. This is his role. This is what he's done all year. You got to trust him to do it. He didn't get it done. But in general, do you guys, Pat, you kind of alluded to it. Do you want to see him in a one inning role? And if so, how are you filling in when a guy like Justin Slayton isn't available? Like, how are you getting through the 6th and 7th innings of those games when Whitlock can go one but can't go two?
Right now, I think you still have to keep him going two at least until Cutter's healthy or until, you know, however they kind of figure out Fitz, Dobbins, and all that stuff. But eventually, once Cutter's back, it's Whitlock to a one-inning role. Because, like I said, he is way more valuable to be a dominant one-inning guy than it is to save the rest of the bullpen and be fine through two innings. And that's right now you have to stick with it because you just simply you don't have the ammo to keep Garrett to one inning. But he's like showing signs of burnout in that second inning the past 3 times he's gone out. And it's just that's going to keep racking up. Like, keep him to one inning. Just do it.
I don't disagree with that at all. I generally like my relievers, especially my high leverage relievers, to be kept to one inning. I think Whitlock is kind of the one exception to this where I like him in the multi-inning role. But I agree, Pat. If you have kind of started to see him, he gets through that first inning, he looks good, and then the second inning, it's not quite the same. And maybe it's due to the usage, and maybe he needs a breather. But right now, you can't afford it because you don't have the arms for that. So you just got to get through it until guys like Cutter get healthy until the trade deadline when you can add. Maybe you can blow out the Marlins now and add a guy, but it just, in general, it's hard to make trades in baseball in May. Sammy, where are you at on Whitlock's role? Or Pat, were you about to say something?
Yeah, real quick. Sorry, Sammy. Team ERA by inning. Sixth inning, 5.14. Seventh inning, 4.89. Eighth inning, 4.37.
Which is crazy because like a week ago, these guys, I had the tweet. It's basically since I tweeted this that they've stopped. But Chapman, Whitlock, and Slayton had thrown in their first 33 combined outings, held the other team scoreless in 28 of them, and that's including Whitlock going two scoreless in almost all of those outings. And it's been a complete 180 since then. But Sammy, where are you at on Whitlock's role?
Well, I think his next outing should be one inning for sure. Let him get a clean inning, have him feel good about himself. But long term, for the rest of the season, I want him to be able to go two innings. I don't want him to be only like every time he pitches, it's two innings. I don't want that. I just want to have the option with Whitlock. Like today on Sunday, I thought you got to get two out of him. You need this win. And you have the luxury of using the other good bullpen arms after him. So why not get two from Whitlock? It's the Twins. They're like bottom 10 in every offensive stat. I'm listening to the game. I'm figuring, cool, this should be a breeze. They can hold a two-run lead. Whitlock for two, Slayton, Chapman, however you want to order that. But, you know, just didn't work out. So I want to have that option, but I'm not married to it. If he keeps floundering in the second inning, which hasn't been super regular, it's happened, but it's not been every time. Then I'm fine turning him into a one inning reliever. Maybe even make him the closer if that's what happens. If he's not going to go two innings, you can make him the closer, and then you can use Chapman in the seventh and eighth whenever like the beefy part of the other team's lineup comes up and you want a strikeout pitcher on the mound. That's why I want to move Chapman around the bullpen, because I think he's really good. Not because I don't think he can handle closer. He has blown up quite a bit in his career, but still, I want to have him able to be pitching in the seventh and eighth inning also. And I know Cora's done some of that, but right now it feels like Chapman is pretty locked in to the ninth inning, and I would just rather move that around. So to put a bow on this, yeah, I'd keep Crochet. Yes, I'd keep Whitlock as a multi-inning guy, but next outing, just one inning.
I think Sammy, maybe where you're trying to go with this is kind of where I'm at with it, which is like, yeah, when in spots where you need him to go one inning, or more than one inning, he should be able to do that. Like right now, Justin Slayton and Aroldis Chapman are exclusively one inning guys. And if you need more than one inning, like you're going to a guy like Justin Wilson or Greg Weissert to try to get through that inning, as opposed to stretching those guys for two. That's not where Whitlock should be. But he also, if this continues, because again, like this is something that guys go through skids. Like we were talking about Griffin Jacks and how awesome he is, but you saw the ERA in this series. It's like, what is it now? Because he's throwing a couple like scoreless
six something. I think he's still at six. Yeah,
still at
or
six.
High fives.
And it's because of like two awful outings. And it's like, okay, if the Twins were having crazy discussions about Griffin Jacks after those two outings, like where would they be? No, obviously this guy is a high leverage guy, and he's going to be in that role. It's going to be the same for Whitlock. You're going to have to give him the opportunity to get through this, and I think he will. And it's the same thing with Slayton. You're going to have to give him the opportunity to get through this. You really, like, I know Weissert has pitched really well. Justin Wilson has pitched pretty well. Liam Hendricks has looked better. But these are your high leverage guys. They have the best stuff on the team. Those are the guys that should be in those roles. And if things get really bad, it's an extended slump, then we can have those conversations. But I mean, it's been three outings for Slayton and what, two or three for Whitlock at this point? Do I have that right? Two? So like, it's like we're premature with this, but I would be open to, in games where it's not needed, like right now, even if it's so not needed, they are throwing Whitlock for two. I would, if you can, limit him to the one and save his arm, because I don't, like, we're in May. I do not want this guy burning out by June or July, but the bullpen construction, it's going to make it hard to keep Whitlock, Slayton, Chapman fresh.
I got a question for you guys, and this is Will Fleming mentioned this on the broadcast in WEI. Would you guys consider temporarily moving Greg Weissert into a more high leverage role? Because he's been really good. I think he gets a lot of unnecessary doubters and stuff, but he's been rock solid for more than just 2025. He was good last year too. He had a bad stretch, but I don't know. I would give him some seventh and eighth inning shots.
I think he's already there. I think they've already been doing it.
Did he pitch the ending
of a two-run game recently?
With a lead. Like yesterday. Not like, oh, keep
he pitched yesterday at a close run.
Yeah, like put him in a game with a lead, I mean. Not like they put him in those leverage spots when they're down and they're like, hey, keep this at a two-run lead. We can rally and win. I want to see him like
he's done the seventh in close games. How many holds does Meissner have this year? Let me look that one up.
I think they can use him kind of how they thought they were going to use Zach. They're very similar.
Yeah.
But Weissert's just been kind of what everyone thought Zach was going to be this year. No, I totally agree, Sammy. You absolutely deploy him in, you know, the seventh inning. Eighth inning if you're in a jam and you go to Whitlock or Slayton a little bit early. But yeah, I trust him at this point. I'm okay with kind of letting him go out there in those close games.
You guys want to hear another terrible stat? Oh, God.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, dude.
All right, let me make sure I'm reading this right. So they've had the lead in 9 straight games and won 4 of them.
Ugh.
Ooh, yuck. 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 Yeah, but that's at any point in the game. That's not like 84% chance to win that in the seventh inning. That's like you could be up 1-0 in the first and that counts. So yeah. Needs context, but that's still ugly.
Still. The other question about the bullpen, the thing a lot of people are talking about was Saturday, Luis Guerrero got optioned to AAA. Do I have it right? 2 outings he threw here or was it 3? For Guerrero.
I can check.
Really. I'm going to pull it up.
3. I think it was 3.
Luis Guerrero.
Yeah, he threw three outings. He threw four innings scoreless. He still has yet to give up a run at the big league level. He let up 1 hit in those 4 innings. He struck out 3. So a lot of people are wondering why was Luis Guerrero optioned instead of Brennan Bernardino or someone else. I think most people would say Bernie. It's tough because to me, I would have kept Luis Guerrero in the majors. I would have ridden that. He has the highest ceiling out of the guys that are not in high leverage roles already. So I would have kept him here and I would have tried to ease him up there. But to me, if you're counting on Luis Guerrero to be a seventh or eighth inning guy for you, when this is a guy the team sees as a fringe up and down major leaguer, minor leaguer. This is a guy who did not have a ton of success in AAA before his promotion. He hasn't missed a ton of bats. With a guy with the stuff that he has, the strikeout numbers in the majors and the minors this year have not been there. As I just read, 3 strikeouts in 4 innings, and it hasn't been better in the minors. I think if you're counting on him to be a high leverage guy, when I ask people if you didn't want Whitlock going 2 today, who did you want? And a lot of people said, I wouldn't have optioned Guerrero and he would have been in that spot. I think you're asking a lot to have Luis Guerrero in those spots with how he's looked all year, even though it's been 4 scoreless. It's just he has not missed bats at the level that you want guys in those tight games in the late innings to miss bats. That said, I would have kept him up here. I wouldn't have optioned him. I still think that there's a path for him to get there. And by the end of the year, he could be that. So I don't want you saying, oh, Gordo said Luis Guerrero sucks. And now it's August and he's up and he's pitching great. I think he could be really good. I just don't know that the stuff is at the level right now today where he should be pitching those games for the Red Sox. Where are you guys on Guerrero? Because I think a lot of people really want Guerrero on this team pitching in high leverage innings.
No. God, no, I don't want him pitching in high leverage innings. We spoke about this earlier today, Gordo. I would like to have Luis Guerrero up with the team as well. Not sure who I would send down. That's a different conversation. That's a tough call. But in a vacuum, I would like to have him in this bullpen. I don't think he's a high leverage guy. I think he's capable, and that's about it. Like
potential.
I always think with a guy like Luis Guerrero, who's, you know, flamboyant, he wears number 99, he's got his cool patchy beard, like you notice him. Yeah, throws hard. Would I be thinking the same way about him if his name was Joe Smith and he threw just as hard and he had the same exact stats and he just wasn't super exciting? I don't know. I think that goes for a lot of people. I think people get caught up in like, this guy is so cool. He is cool. He's awesome. And he used to have dreads. I wish he kept the dreads. Those look really cool. But yeah, I think Guerrero is capable, but no, I don't want him in high leverage. Not right now, at least. Maybe someday, but not in May. You got to prove yourself first.
Agreed. Yeah, that's the thing is people, I think people are putting the cart before the horse a little bit with Guerrero just because they know, they see what he can be, and credit to them. You're not wrong about that. Like, this guy can be very good if all goes right for him. But just because that potential is there does not mean that this guy should be the closer right now. It doesn't mean that he should be the seventh or eighth inning guy right now. But should he be on the team? Maybe. Pat, where are you at on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm treating him like any other young bullpen arm. Right, I'm deploying him like I am Justin Wilson and Bernardino in the earlier innings. You know, fifth inning if the starter gets pulled early, sixth inning if it's a decent lead or you're down a chunk, seventh. Like, once he does that more than the three innings he's done this year and shows he can handle that, then you bump him up. Then you bump him up, and like just gradual exposure there. I'm not calling up Luis Guerrero tomorrow to take the second inning of Whitlock's outings. That's not happening. Right. I get he looks good. I'm not saying he will not be a good MLB reliever, but to call up a guy who's not been phenomenal in AAA and just throw him in seventh and eighth inning, that is the exact move that people, like, once he blows up once, people are like, fire core, what is he doing? You people wanted it. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And that's how you have to go about it. You give him very, very low leverage. He does that, you know, 5-7 times. Cool. Closer game, seventh inning, and then up and up and up, and just kind of build him up that way.
Question for you guys. So right now, as we're recording, it's May 4th. Still, I would call it still early in the season. You don't really see many trades this time of year. Would you guys be okay if the Red Sox, they would have to overpay, have to overwhelm a team to add some bullpen help, because it seems like just the amount of games already that they've lost because of this bullpen, it's the type of thing that you can look back on in September and be like, fuck, if they had not blown four out of nine games in this month, then we wouldn't be 2.5 behind Seattle in the wild card, blah, 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 blah. Like, would you guys be open to overwhelming Miami or overwhelming the White Sox? The White Sox don't have anyone. Overwhelming a bad team for a reliever to help the bullpen today.
I would be open to it just because I think, A, they've made it very clear that this year is in their window. Like, this is a year where they are trying to win the World Series. And not just that, but they have one of the top farm systems in Major League Baseball. They've got guys that are blocked at the major league level. They've got guys in AA that are blocked at AAA. Like, you've got guys that are, we talked about it last year when they made the trades for like Luis Garcia, where they traded like four Rule 5 eligible guys. And it was the same thing with Danny Jansen with two Rule 5 eligible guys. You have the need to offload some of these guys. Otherwise, you're going to lose them for nothing. So am I willing to overpay for guys? Yeah, I'm willing to overpay. Do I think it's realistic to expect maybe anybody but those two teams, the Marlins or the White Sox, who you correctly said, Sammy, do they even have anybody that you would want to trust in a setup role for this team? Probably not. So it's really just like the Marlins, and even they probably, what? Fauché?
Calvin Fauché. Is that how you say it? Foucher?
Fauché. Yes, Fauché.
Oh, we can't have Crochet and Fauché on the same team.
Dude, are you kidding? That would be sick.
I thought it was Foucher this whole time. Are you positive?
All right, we got to look.
One of us is the pronunciation. Yeah, one of us is going to be violently wrong about this.
I hope I'm wrong. It would be way funnier if I'm wrong. Fauché. Calvin Fauché. Let's see.
But he's not an experienced guy. He's like a metrics guy. I mean, he's having a good season. 3.18 ERA, 12 games, 11.1 inning, 10 strikeouts. Not great. Walks a lot of guys. Doesn't get barreled a lot though. That's good. But that's a guy you can put
down this year.
Oh God. All right, so probably not him. I don't know. Pirates?
It's Fauché. It's Fauché.
Fauché? No way. Yeah. That's crazy. I didn't know that.
No way, Fauché.
No way, Fauché.
Sammy, to answer your question, yes, I would pay whatever it takes to get a guy in here tomorrow. Just because I'm a big believer in, like, I don't think you're going to have to overpay so drastically that it's going to be much different than the price is going to be on like the trade deadline day. Because if it's a good arm that guys that teams are going to want, there's going to be a whole bidding war. The price is going to go way, way up, 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 up. If you just pay that up front right now, there's no difference to me. I don't care. Because you're going to have to pay a decent amount now or 2 months from now. So just get it done now where you can actually save yourself a couple of wins.
But the issue here is that outside of the Marlins, Victor Vodnik on the Rockies.
He's good on the Rockies. I'm looking right now. I'm trying to find. Oh, no, he's hurt.
He's got to be controllable too. Here's the issue. Rocky's in there too, but they also don't have guys that I would want in a setup role. They have one guy actually. Bird is a guy
I wanted last year. I like Jake Bird with the freaking beard.
What's his team control look like? He's got
standby.
Yeah, he's got to have plenty left. But that's the issue, though, is that like if you're talking today to teams about trades, like teams like we talk about Yandy Diaz with the Rays are not trading you Yandy Diaz today. Like they're trying to put themselves in a position where they can make the playoffs because it's early May. In July, if they're five games out of a playoff spot, like yeah, they'll talk. But right now, like even if you're going to overwhelm a team, it's going to have to be a team like the Marlins, the Rockies, the White Sox. That might be it. And most of those teams are bad for a reason. They don't have these guys for the most part.
Yeah, so Bird is ARB1 eligible next year, but he's kind of older. He's going to be 30 next year. He's not a free agent until 2029 when he's 33. But this guy, I mean, like Rockies, this is also the kind of guy.
They're idiots. They don't trade anyone.
They don't trade anyone. They're so annoying, man.
They suck. They're so stupid. They're not in this league.
No,
but whatever.
They're not. We're kicking them out.
They're
goodbye.
Gone.
Goodbye. I'm trying to think like who is already like kind of cooked or why? Like how far out are the Nationals right now? Are the Nationals completely cooked? Because Kyle Finnegan would be great. They're not super into him. No, I don't think they will. You're right. I mean, the real guy you want at the deadline, who's certainly not available now. There's two of them. You saw both of them today. Griffin Jacks, Yoan Duran.
Yeah.
One of those guys from the Twins. Both could be closers. They've both been closers. Duran throws 275 miles an hour. Griffin Jacks is just like impossible to hit, except for those two games he had in April. So that's who I'm really looking at. But that's a team you just lost two out of three to, so I don't even feel comfortable talking about it right now.
Yeah,
I think
it's
one name,
be a while till we can get there.
I think one name, just kind of like Duran and Jacks by the deadline. Phil Maton, if the Cardinals start to fall
they
out.
They could have signed Phil Maton. They were rumored to be in on Phil Maton. They didn't. They needed one more arm. That was right there for them.
Perfect guy to take one of Whitlock's two innings. It still leaves Slayton and Chapman on the back end.
Isn't he kind of an idiot? Isn't he an idiot? Did he like punch a wall and like have to miss like a month?
No, that's Chris Sale. No, I'm kidding.
Hey. Yeah, Maton would be great. How many guys were there that we were talking about this offseason? Like, to go back, Carlos Estevez, Maton.
The prominent one is David Robertson, and a lot of people are going to be hammering the David Robertson horn, like, get David Robertson. Yep. Here's the issue with that. This is a guy who's not built up right now, and a guy who has not had a spring training. That's a guy you're going to have to wait at least a month. If you signed him today, he probably would not be ready for the majors until sometime in June. And
we don't know what he's doing right now. I don't know. Maybe he's in some program and he's like, oh, I'm 40 years old. I'm still good. I don't want to play until like the second, like what Rich Hill did. I don't know. I'm just playing devil's advocate. But yeah, there's Robertson.
And he's 40. That's the other thing. He's no guarantee. He's 40.
True. But yeah, it's just so frustrating. Who's, what's his name? The reporter, the guy, Gordo, your guy. Oh, Robert Murray. Remember when he was like, I am positive the Red Sox are going to add another reliever. And we were like, well, thank God, because that's the most obvious thing in the world. And then they didn't. Remember that? And he's a guy I trust. Like, I think he's good. Remember he tweeted, I am positive the Red Sox, like, or maybe not positive, but he's like, I am very confident.
I mean, they kind of did. He just didn't make the roster with Matt Moore and Ottavino.
But that can't be who he was alluding to. He means like a major league reliever, not a like, here's a non-roster invitee kind of guy like Adam Ottavinsky or whatever. Like, come on. Like,
that's a good point.
Yeah, Matt Moore, they had to throw him in the bin, man. He's gonzo.
Ready to prioritize yourself? Your skin is a great place to start. Dime Beauty, founded by a master esthetician, is more than just a skincare company. With four skin-conscious categories, skincare, beauty, body care, and fragrance, Dime offers simple, spa-worthy products that will help bring your glow back. Whether you're revitalizing your regimen with nourishing products or building one from scratch, Dime makes it easy. The Work System, our all-in-one best-selling routine, includes a cleanser of your choice, toner, serums, and moisturizers, taking the guesswork out of skincare for your healthiest, happiest skin yet. Dime's commitment to clean ingredients and sustainable packaging ensures every product is as gentle on your skin as it is on the planet. With thousands of glowing 5-star reviews and a loyal community, the results speak for themselves. Revive your skin and give yourself the routine refresh you deserve by visiting dimebeautyco.com. That's dimebeautyco.com. Your best skin awaits.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We gotta get to enough said before we get out of here. And I'm going to go first because I told you I delayed this podcast so I could try to pull up a couple of stats, not even baseball related. Because I told you in the opening, it's like we're kind of sandwiching this thing about why I still have hope that this team is going to turn it around. And I thought back, do you guys remember the first year of this iteration of the Celtics? It was the Ime Udoka year. They made the finals. They lost to the Warriors. In the first 47 games of that season, 57% of the way through that year, they were 23-24. They were under 500, 57% of the way through that season. But in 12 of those 24 games, they lost by two possessions or less. Okay, so it's what made me think of it, because the Red Sox are 4-9 in one-run games. If you flip that script, they're 10 games over 500, but that's just not the way it is. The Celtics season that year, I was thinking the same thing. It's like this team is winning a lot of games, and then they're losing a lot of close ones. And it's like they're 500, but it feels like they should be better. And I'm so pissed off at this team because they keep losing these close games. And I get so mad after close games that my teams lose. I don't get mad when they get blown out because that game's over in the second inning. I get mad when they're leading in the seventh or the eighth inning and they lose. So the Celtics, it was kind of inexplicable that they were that bad, but they weren't getting blown out. And then they went 28-7 the rest of the way and made it to the NBA Finals. So the Red Sox, I actually don't know off the top of my head what percent of the way they are through the season. So we are, what, how many games in are we? 36 games in out of 162. So what percentage do we think that is? Come on, Pat. Dude.
Like 1/5.
I'll do the math.
18%.
18%. Yeah, we're not even 20% in. Yeah.
18%. And the team hasn't even dug itself a hole. Let's go look at the standings right now. In the
two games back.
They're two games back of the division, and they are 1.5 games back of a wild card spot. So it's not like they now have to make up 6-7 games. Like, this is a team that is built to succeed. That's why it's so frustrating that they're not winning. That said, even though I'm the king of this is not like a tiny sample size, but that said, when you have 82% of the games to go, you're only a couple games out, and the team is still, even without Tristan Casas, built to be, oh, Pat says 22%. 22%. So you have 78% of the season left. You've got a team that is built to win. You've got a front office that should be aggressive to add the right pieces when they can. I still think this team is going to get where it needs to go. That said, it doesn't excuse that it's been colossal disappointment might be a little bit overstated, but it's been close to that based on the expectations we've had. But I think they're going to get there. That's where my head is at, but it's also why I'm so goddamn frustrated after all these blown games.
So, Gordo, with that comparison then, who is the Ime Udoka in this situation where the coach gets fired for flirting with the owner?
Ooh, yeah.
Ooh. Using the owner's wife.
I can't believe that happened.
I saw Blake Sable talking to Linda.
Damn it. Emmanuel Valdez and Bobby Dalbec would have been perfect scapegoats for that.
It was Josh Winkowski all along.
Oh, shit. Him,
that handsome devil. Yeah, that's good. Gordo, actually, normally when people compare different sports to make a point, I'm like, but that's actually like, I kind of like that. Maybe it's just because it's positive. It makes me feel good. But I like that. That was good. Good digging. Worth the time.
Yeah. The only part about it is like the Celtics were losing close games. It's like you can kind of point to like little moments throughout the game that make those things happen. With the Red Sox, they're losing these games because the bullpen is blowing it. And the bullpen is something that I think even from before the start of the season, we were like, they're an arm short. But that said, like they don't have to be an arm short forever. But
you know, we were talking last week, not to go back to the bullpen really quick. We were talking last week. I was saying I want them to get a leverage arm. You guys were kind of like, no, I don't think they need leverage. They need like a capable, like good, like early relief guy, because at the time it was the middle relievers who were blowing the game. So that made sense. Now I'm like, you might need both. You might need a middle relief guy and the back end guy. Like never too much.
Back it up. I basically, what I wanted back then was like a setup guy that you put like that. I wanted him to be your kind of sixth or seventh inning guy, or eighth inning guy that like replaces the middle relief, which at the time was the issue. Now it kind of feels like everything's the issue and it's all kind of crashing down.
Yeah, I think they need both. I think they need a guy like that you just described, like a seventh, eighth inning guy that they can use in the sixth, seventh, and eighth, and then a guy who slots in, who can slot in the ninth inning, like a real motherfucker, like Duran.
Yeah, they need like Lucas Sims and Luis Garcia.
Yeah, baby, let's go get him.
Lucas Sims on the Nationals, he could be available. Someone do your Nuff set. I'll pull up Lucas Sims' stats. I know he started off good, but I don't know where he's at now.
I'll go. I teased this on Twitter a little bit. This is a warning. This is X-rated. If you are not appropriate, turn off the episode now. I think I know what the Red Sox celebration is.
Lucas Sims.
Which
is
one?
Bad,
which
way,
one?
But go on, Pat.
Which celebration? Because they have a few.
I think they're intertwined. This one. Oh. And then all
describe,
of the...
Describe what you're doing for listeners.
Yeah. So, sorry. The filming the camera. So holding up the square, doing the kind of roll in the film. And then it pans over the dugout. And you got Giolito rubbing his nipples in crochet fake making out with somebody. I think, and this is from talking to no one within the organization, so this has no inside information. This is just me putting context clues together. They're making movies of fucking teams up, making movies fucking, and then hence all the sexual innuendos from the Giolitos, the Crochets, and the Dick Fitzes of the world.
Or Pat, here's another theory. Maybe one of the Red Sox players dabbled in pornography for one or two times.
Maybe they just love each other. How about that, guys? You ever thought about that? And they want to remember the love they have for each other, so they're filming the good times.
But about that? Next time Duran hits a double or Bregman hits a home run, think of my theory and then put it in that reference. It makes so much sense.
All right, I'll keep it in mind. Oh. All right. Sammy, do you got enough said before we get out of here?
Yeah, see? Like...
I like how it's Crochet and Giolito too, the two giant people on the team. My Nuff said, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see that I'm wearing the Armbarn hat that Gordo wore. I think you wore it at some point.
He wore
the shirt. I'm wearing that hat. Gordo, it didn't work with Gordo. He might not be the right guy for the armbar. That's painful.
I'm not the right guy. You don't say maybe. I'm not the right guy for it.
Right guy for the arm barn or the arm bar, because you don't do jiu-jitsu. But maybe me. Maybe I'm an arm barn guy. Why am I struggling to say this so much? I'm really struggling. Maybe I'm the arm barn guy, so I'm going to give it a shot. If this doesn't work, maybe Pat's going to try it. But this is our second attempt to get some good luck from PETA, which is a... storyline I never thought we'd be talking about, but here we are. We're using the power of animal people who accidentally make people not want to support animals because they're so bad at their messaging, even though everyone loves animals, as I have my fat cat sleeping right next to me. So hopefully the arm barn luck turns around. Tuesday will be the first game where we test it. So if the bullpen blows, if the arm barn blows up, my fault on Tuesday.
I think we're going to have before and after stats of the Red Sox bullpen before the arm barn merch arrived on my doorstep versus the Red Sox bullpen / arm barn after the arm barn merch arrived on my doorstep. The stats will probably blow your mind. I'll put that together at some point. Maybe the next time the Red Sox arm barn blows again, I'll pull it. I'll pull.
Look at me. Look how dorky this hat is. Hey, man. Do you it's like not, the Harbard
hat? Not a hat meant to be worn backwards. It looks weird backwards.
Come on, let's go talk about why bullpens are offensive.
All right.
The Bulls.
Well, the Red Sox bullpen lately has been offensive to me and to us, and hopefully it turns around. But that's going to do it for episode 207 of Playtesi. Appreciate you guys tuning in, making it through the episode. Remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. Find us on YouTube. We're on the WEI channel, so you can find all of our episodes. Just find the Playtesi playlist there. It'll have all of them there, and you can hit the thumbs up on those, which helps us out a lot. Subscribe to WEI as well. Find us on the socials at Playtesi on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And don't forget and subscribe so you get the notification. But we've got a good interview coming for you guys on Wednesday. We'll keep it under wraps. But he's a very talked about guy and one of people's favorites in this organization. So we're really excited to have that for you guys on Wednesday. But till then, this is for me, Gordo, Sammy, Pat, for Joe producing. Thanks for tuning into this one. Peace.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.